This week we're going to continue our study on the book of John. If you remember last week, we related to you a study that was made where people gave away $20 and where they spent it on themselves or somebody else, determined how they felt. Well, part of the same study, they did something else that some of us might like to have been part of. They studied how much people love chocolate. And they actually divided, they took a whole group of people that all had said that they liked chocolate, and they divided them into two groups, and they gave them all a chocolate bar. They came in, and they measured how much they liked chocolate. Now, I don't know exactly how they measured how much you like chocolate, but they did, and they measured how much they enjoyed that chocolate bar. And then half the group, through the week, they were going to abstain, not have any chocolate for a week, and then come back together. And the other half, they could have as much chocolate as they wanted, and they actually gave them a 2-pound sack of chocolate as they left. So they'd have pretty much as much chocolate as they wanted the whole week. Then they got back together at the end of the week, and they gave them another chocolate bar. And they measured again how much they liked the chocolate. And the group that had abstained from having chocolate liked that chocolate bar even more than they had the week before. But the ones that had pretty much as much chocolate as they wanted, when they got together, they didn't like the chocolate bar nearly as much as they had the week before. It turned out that when you have as much as you want of something, you've got to have even more to even have the same amount of pleasure as you used to have. Now, as we go through our lesson in 1 John, you'll see that study maybe makes even more sense as we see what John has to say to us. Throughout the Bible, there's a little word that keeps coming up that sometimes we don't like to hear very much, and that's that word of self-control. The idea of controlling our passions and our desires actually makes us happier than if we give in to them and take all that we want. Look over with me to 1 John. As we go through the second chapter of 1 John, this is a very simple book in many ways. In fact, as you go through it, John's going to give you there's this and there's that. There's the light and the darkness. There's the right and the wrong. There's no in-between. A lot of times we don't really like to hear that. We like to hear there's a little bit of in-between, a little gray that, yeah, I know I could do this, but we like kind of smooth it in there. John doesn't let you do that. There's either this or there's that. There's the right and the wrong. There's no in-between. And you see that as we go through this book that he's written for us. Now, back in chapter 1, verse 5, John wrote, "This is the message we have heard from him and proclaimed to you." What John's going to tell us is the message he received from Jesus. It's not something he thought up. It's not something just that he thought was a neat story, so to speak. But he's going to give us the message that he received, the revelation that he received from Jesus. He's passing that on. This is one that was with Jesus when he was on earth. This was one that lived with Jesus. And so John gives us the message that Christ gave to him to pass on to us. In chapter 2, begin with me in verse 3. "And by this we know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments." Sometimes we wonder, do we really know Jesus? Do we really know the way we're going? Have you ever gone down a road, maybe it's a road that you've gone down many times, but you haven't maybe for a few years, maybe going back to where you grew up or something. And so it's an area that you think you know, and you go down the road and things don't look quite right. And you wonder, am I on the right road? And try to pretend like, you know, you don't have a GPS that you can turn back on. But before the days of GPS. So you're driving down the road and you think you're going right, but you're not sure. And then all of a sudden you see a landmark. And you say, now I know where I am. And you drive on to where you think you're going to be. In some ways, that's what John is letting us know. He says, you can know these things. You don't have to wonder you're going right. Throughout the book of 1 John, as we've seen, this is a book written so that you can know that you're on the right path as you live your life. And this is what he says on down. He says, "And this we know, that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, I know him, but does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. And by this we know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way that he walked." If we remember a few weeks back, we looked at the book of James. James has a couple of statements very similar to what John says in these words. James says, don't just hear the word, be doers of the word. Remember that verse in chapter 1, verse 22? In chapter 2 of James, he says, you think you have faith? I'll show you my faith by my works, or I'll show you my faith by how I live my life. And that's what John is saying here. You say you know Jesus, you call yourself a Christian, you know Jesus, but you don't follow His words, you don't follow His commandments. He says, you're lying. That's a pretty strong word. If you ever call somebody a liar, that's pretty strong, you call somebody a liar. It's almost like John sort of hitting us upside the head. He says, you call yourself a Christian, but you don't really follow the commandments of Jesus? You're lying. You're nothing but a liar. That's strong. The whole book of John is like this. This is not a book that lets you go over here or over there and you kind of slide through it. Sometimes we like to sort of slide by. John doesn't let you do that. He says, you call yourself a Christian, then that means you follow Jesus. You call yourself a Christian, that means you better live like Jesus lived. You ought to walk the walk. Don't tell me you talk the talk. Walk as Jesus walked. Live like He lived, is what John is telling us. Look over to Luke chapter 9. And notice what Jesus says about walking as He walked. Look at what He says in chapter 9, verse 57. As they were going along the road, someone said to Him, that is to Jesus, I will follow you wherever you go. That's walking. That's talking the talk anyway, isn't it? I'll follow you wherever you go. But Jesus said to him, foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay His head. Notice what Jesus says to him. You want the things of this world? You're not going to follow Me because I don't have them. Even a fox has a place that he can call home. I don't even have that. So if you want to follow Me, you're not following the world. And that's where John is leading us down this path today. To follow Jesus doesn't mean to live like the world lives. It's not following after, giving in to all our passions, all the things that we want. It's living a different way. It's living as Jesus lived. Jesus said when He came to serve, not to be served. We like to be served. We like people to wait on us. Jesus says, I came to serve and give My life as a ransom for many. In Hebrews chapter 5, it has another passage about the obedience that Jesus had. And so, maybe a little hard for us to think about sometimes, but if you look over to Hebrews chapter 5, it talks about the suffering that Jesus went through. And in chapter 5, verse 8 and 9, although He was a son, He learned obedience through what He suffered. That's talking about Jesus on the earth, and especially when He went to the cross. And being made perfect, He became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey Him. Now, we don't think about Jesus being made perfect. In one sense, He was always perfect in that He had no sin. But here the word perfect means made complete. And if Jesus is called to be our example, then that means He had to do all the things that He calls for us to do. And that's what He says here. All the things that we're called to do, we're called to be obedient. In the same way Jesus was obedient to His Father. And we're called to walk after Him just as Christ walked after His Father. And that way He was made complete and could be the perfect example. Because all the things that Jesus did or calls us to do, He did Himself. And so in that respect, He is the author of our salvation, that perfect example that we are called to follow. And so we're called to know our salvation and to know the God that we follow. But we're called to obey Him. And so if we call ourselves Christians, if we call ourselves we're to be Christ-like, Christian means to follow Christ, that means we're to walk as Jesus walked. We're to live as He lived. And that's the first test of our salvation that John gives us. Now look at the next section. And the way John words this was a little tricky, so you have to listen to what he says. Beginning in verse 7, beloved, I'm writing to you no new command, but an old commandment that I've given you from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment that I'm writing to you, which is true in Him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is always shining. Whoever says that he is in the light and hates his brother is still in the darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light. In him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother and is in the darkness walks in the darkness and does not know where he's going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Now, how can a commandment be a new commandment and an old commandment at the same time? That's sort of what John says. Hey, I'm telling you an old commandment, but this old commandment is really a new commandment. So what's John telling us? Well, look over to John chapter 13, and you see how Jesus introduced this same commandment. Jesus says almost the same thing. In chapter 13 of John, Jesus is talking to his disciples the last time before he goes to the cross. In fact, he knows he's going to be arrested in just an hour or so, and within a day, he's going to be on the cross. So this is the last time he gets to talk to his disciples before that. And listen to what he says in chapter 13, verse 34. Jesus says, "A new command I give you, that you love one another." Now, if you stopped right there, you might say, "Well, Jesus, what? That's not new." When they ask you what were the two great commandments, you said to love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And we know that was given to us by Moses. Those are old commandments, and that he even goes through and says, if you hold to those two, then all the other commandments hold to those two, to love God and love your neighbor. But listen how Jesus concludes this. "A new commandment I give you, to love one another just as I have loved you." And that's what makes it new. It's no longer good enough just to love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus calls us to love each other as he has loved us. And that makes it a new commandment. That we might call raises the bar, but it makes it closer to home. We're to love each other as Jesus showed us how to love. But how did he love us? He laid down his life on the cross for us. He was willing to die for us. That's the way that we have to be willing to love each other. In that respect, it's a new command. Now, John goes on. And he brings out the other half of this. If you don't do this, then you're not following after Jesus, because now, instead of walking in the light, you're in darkness. Have you ever been mad at somebody? Pretty much all of us at some time in our lives have been mad at somebody, right? Ever been angry at somebody and hold that anger into your heart? Now you're stepping past just being mad at somebody. And now that anger is what John is talking about. When you hold anger, that's like holding hate in your life. And when you hold anger in your heart, who is it hurting? Your heart becomes dark. And you may have remember some of the Gary Smalley tapes we showed like a year or so ago. In some of his books, Smalley goes through a long discussion about one of the things that destroys marriages is anger. Because one person has done something to the other person, and they get mad, and they hold that anger in. And what does anger do? It blinds you. You don't even see what the other person is doing for you. He goes through examples where one person is angry at the other, and then the other spouse tries to make up for it and tries to do good things. And the one that's angry, that anger blinds them. They don't even see what's happening. And that's exactly what John says. Anger or hate for your brother blinds you to what's going on around you. And if you hold anger in your heart, you're blind. That's like holding darkness in. You remember back a few verses, he says, "God is light, in him there's no darkness." If we're going to walk in the light, we can't hold darkness in our lives. You can't hold that darkness in. And anger, hate for your brothers, is darkness. One of the passages that we're going to see through, one of the thoughts that we're going to see throughout the book of 1 John, it's this idea of everything comes down to this one thing. Love your neighbor as Jesus loved us. John's going to keep coming back to that. He's going to go so far to say, if you will just do this, if you will love your neighbor as Jesus loved you, then you'll keep all the commands of God, you will obey God, and you will even show your love for God. Everything revolves around this one thought. Love your neighbor as Jesus has loved you. Love your neighbor as yourself. If you can do that, then everything else in your life will fall into place. Now look at the last test this morning that John will give to us. And this is over towards the end. The next little section, he really commends the Christians for what they do. And one of the words that John will use for these Christians is "my children" and even "little children." He often addresses the church as "my little children." It's very dear words, if you think about it, to address a group of people as "my little children." But that's what John does over throughout this section. Listen to what he says now in verse 15. "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all of this is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life. It's not from the Father, but it's from the world. And the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever loves the will of God abides forever. Now, there's two ways the word world is used in the Bible. In one sense, it's used basically for the entire world, and mostly not so much the mountains and streams and stuff, but the people of the world. In John 3:16, most are familiar, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. There's the world, just everybody. But here, the way that John uses world is not just everybody. It's those that are under the kingdom, what we might call the secular world. And it's opposed to the kingdom of light. There's really two kingdoms John's going to talk about. The kingdom of God, the kingdom of light, and the kingdom of this world. And that's what he's talking about here, is the kingdom of this world. If you look over to chapter 5 of John, in 5:19, John says these words, "We know that we are from God, and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one." That is the world that he's talking about. This world in general, not the kingdom of light, the world in general is under the power of the evil one. Look over to Ephesians chapter 2, and notice how Paul refers to almost the same way. In Ephesians 2, Paul says these words, "And you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience." Now, what both Paul and John are saying is that this world is under the power of the evil one. This week, probably not a single one of us hasn't seen what happened out in Colorado in the massacre of the people in the theater. And you see things like that happening a few years back at it happened at Virginia Tech when somebody just goes off and just randomly kills countless people, and it's just evil. And you see these things and you realize this world is under the power of the evil one. And that's one of the messages. This world is under the power of Satan. And you see that when you see things like this happen. And you realize there are two kingdoms. There's the kingdom of this world, which is basically evil, and there's the kingdom of light. What John is trying to show us, you can live in either kingdom you want. You can live in the kingdom of light, or you can live in this kingdom of darkness. And this darkness is real. And you see the evil that's here. You know that there's going to come a time where God will bring all things into judgment. But for right now, Satan is in control of this world. He is the prince of the air. And he is at power over the world. And you see it when things like what happened over in Colorado happened. And we see these things happen. And we know that the power of evil is real. Notice the warnings that John gives us. He warns us against the desires of the flesh. That's really just our passion desires. It's like wanting too much chocolate. And we do. We want the things of this world. We want whatever it is. We're not sexual pleasures or just more food or just more. We just want it. And that's what he's warning us about, just the desires and passions of just wanting more all the time. And so much that's what we drop into. Desires of the eyes. We see what other people have and we want that. We envy what other people have. Do we need it? Half time we don't need it, but they got it. We want it. We envy other people. And the last one, the pride of life, is the pride of what we have achieved ourselves, what we have. Whether or not it's the new car or the new iPod or whatever it is, all these things we glory in the things that we have and have achieved. And John says, these things are of the world. Why? They are the world because these things will all pass away. These things aren't really real. Look over to 2 Corinthians and notice how Paul brings this idea out of the how not real these things are. They pass away before we even see them. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I know it's a passage I've used before, but it always strikes home. It says, "As we look not to the things that are seen," the things that are seen, this world around us that we see, "as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are only transient. They're only temporary. But the things that are unseen, these are eternal. And that's what we have to realize and remember, the eternal things of this world, and not the things that are just going to pass away before we even know that they're here. Think about, what do we walk after? Do we walk after Jesus, or do we walk after the things of this world that don't really satisfy us? Jesus says you cannot serve two masters. We try often, but Jesus says you can't do it. You can't run both directions. If you're in a football game, there's one goal line, and that's yours, and the other goal line, that's the other team's, and you can't go both directions. You've got to decide, what goal line are you going for? Jesus says, you cannot serve two masters. You can't serve this world and money and serve me. You've got to decide which one you're going to go for. This world passes away. Even as we're here, we see things passing away. Who was glamorous 10 years ago? Are they still glamorous today? Who was the great football teams even 10 years ago? Are they the great football team? I mean, everything we have, it's one year to the next. Things pass away before you even know that they're passing away. And yet those are the things we seem to put so much importance to. Even the things, these iPods and iPads and things that we have 10 years from now, but probably going to be something else that we're going to want, and we're not going to want those anymore. These things pass away. They're only transient. They're only temporary. Everything in the world, the passions of this world don't satisfy. That's what John's trying to get you to see. He says, walk as Jesus walked. Live the real life. This is where this will satisfy. This leads to eternal life. Everything in this world, it's just going to pass away. Paul says in Romans 6:23, the wages of sin, the just results of this world is death. But the gift of God's eternal life. Let me relate to you one other story. This is one I did, I know, read a few years back. But it always struck me, and I came across it this week. There was an astrophysicist named Chandrasar, usually just called Chandra. And he won the Nobel Prize in 1983. And at that time, he was one of the most celebrated physicists in the world. He had earned every award that you could earn as a physicist. And if you had to just, you know, think about all the awards that this world could give, this man had achieved them. He was born in India, but he was raised in the United States and was an American. And this, towards the end of his life, another physicist was actually writing a biography of him. And they had this conversation. In this conversation, Sandra says, "In fact, I consider myself an atheist, but I have a feeling of disappointment because the hope of contentment and a peaceful outlook on life as a result of pursuing a goal has remained largely unfulfilled." K.C. Wally replied, who was writing his biography, says, "What do you mean? A single-minded pursuit of science, understanding parts of nature with such enormous success, still leaves you with a feeling of discontentment?" He says, "I don't really have a sense of fulfillment. All I have done seems not to be very much." K.C. Wally says, "Well, everybody has those sorts of feelings." And Chandra replied, "Well, that may be. But the fact that other people experience it doesn't change the fact that one is experiencing it. It doesn't become any less personal on that account. What is true for my own personal case is that I simply don't have a sense of harmony, which I hoped for when I was young. I have persevered in science for over 50 years. The time I've devoted to other things is minuscule." Here is a man that had lived his life and had achieved everything he had hoped to achieve. And at the end of the life realized it just didn't really amount to very much. You see, the things of this world pass away, regardless of what it is that you think will give you whatever it is that you're looking for. The things that are eternal, these come from the Lord. These are based upon Christ and living your life as He does. If you go back to chapter 1, John talks about walking in the light as He is in the light. Then we can have fellowship with each other and fellowship with Him. Remember a couple of weeks, that idea of fellowship is that God wants to be your friend. Now that is a thought that should really change your life. God wants to be a friend with you. He wants to have fellowship with you. He offers you a kingdom of light. He offers you fellowship for all eternity. But you have a choice to make. You can live in the kingdom of light or the kingdom of darkness of this world. And that's where John, he wants to show you the right way to walk, and then he gives us the warning about the wrong way. And he's going to go through the rest of the book the same way, showing us that we need to decide, are we going to walk in the light? Are we going to love our brother or sister as God calls us to? Are we going to have fellowship with him? Or are we going to have fellowship and love of the world? And that's the decision you have to make today. Which way are you going to live your life? Are you going to walk in the light or in the darkness? There's no in between. There's no middle road. John doesn't give you, well, you can just do a little bit of it. There's none of that in John. It's either this or it's that. It's light or darkness. There's no gray. You have to decide this morning, are you going to walk in the light or in the darkness? Walking in the light means walking as Jesus walked, living your life as he lived. It means giving your life to him, being baptized into his death. And just as he arose to walk a new life, you walk in newness of life with him for all eternity. If you've started that walk, but you've gotten off base, why not come back to him today? If you need to come in anyway, won't you come as together we stand and sing.